February 16th, 2017, it's the Lullabot Podcast. Hey everybody, it's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 205. I'm Matt Cleave, senior developer at Lullabot. With me as always, front-end developer extraordinaire from Gainesville, Florida, Mike Herschel. Hey, Mike.
Welcome.
So, we're actually, like, next to each other.
Yes, I can see into your deep blue eyes.
So, Lullabot is a distributed company. We're usually at all of the corners of the earth and, you know, working from our home offices or wherever people choose to work, and it's not often we actually get the chance to get together.
Yep, but once a year the whole company comes out to beautiful Palm Springs, California for a company retreat.
Yeah, so we're here now, right?
Yep, overlooking a pool with some beautiful mountains.
It's gorgeous. It's good. We've had a great week. So one thing that happens when we have the chance to get together as a company, Mike, is that we get the chance to interact with some different parts of the company that we don't usually, you know, get the chance to talk to, right?
Yep.
Like who?
Like Helen Porter.
Yeah.
Hey there.
Helen Porter.
Okay. Helen Porter is our account manager here at Lullabot.
Yeah. Who else?
We also have the president of Lullabot, Mr. Brian Skyron, out of the great state of Texas.
Hello.
Hey, Brian.
And we also have our COO from Colorado, Seth Brown.
Hey, Seth.
Hello.
So with these three fine individuals around the table, we're going to be talking about sales at Lullabot.
Sales.
How to sell digital strategy, digital design, digital development, that kind of thing?
Things, yeah.
Yeah, the kinds of things that Lullabot does.
So what type of services does Lullabot sell?
Wow. Well, we do a lot. We build websites. We design websites. We strategize websites. And not just websites, apps. We do work on Samsung apps, Roku apps, some mobile app work, but really the bread and butter of what we do is web related work, and obviously a lot of people know us from Drupal. We're also doing a lot of JavaScript these days, content strategy, kind of the whole gamut.
So is this mainly in the United States?
Yeah, for the most part, our clients come from the U.S. Every now and then we'll have someone, you know, in Europe or what have you. But generally, we work with U.S. clients for the most part.
So we've worked with some pretty prominent companies. Is there any that we can name?
Yeah, we can name a lot. So we do a lot of work with NBC Universal, sites like Sci-Fi, Bravo TV, MSNBC. We do a lot of work with NBC Entertainment, which includes NBC.com, Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, several other of their entertainment brands that are escaping me at the moment. Let's see, SpaceX, Tesla. We've done work with Turner Broadcasting, NYU Langone Medical Center, Qualcomm, all over the place. Harvard University, MTV.co.uk, Martha Stewart. And on and on and on and on.
Well, the first thing you said, Brian, was that, some of the ones that we can name. It seems like a strange thing. How come we can't talk about some of the work we do?
Well, we are under lots of non-disclosure agreements. Our clients oftentimes really have tight requirements around what we can disclose, what we can talk about, what we can do case studies on. And as a result, sometimes we work on some really awesome stuff that we can't name the client, so we start to do those fun things like saying, a large conglomerate in the computer industry, when we're describing those things. So, yeah, that's pretty much why.
So how much does a project like that cost? And I know the answer is going to be, it depends, but what's the range?
I'd say typically our projects that are actually, you know, building websites or significant design engagements range from, say, $200,000 at the low end to as much as $4 or $5 million. Although at those price tags, you know, that might happen over the course of a year or a little bit more. So it runs the gamut, but it's, yeah, it ain't cheap.
As far as selling things, what we sell often is kind of the time and materials, you know, developer time, strategy time. Is there something different about selling services at a digital agency?
Is it difficult to sell some services versus others?
It depends. It's different selling some services than others. I mean, as a professional services company, fundamentally what we sell is our time at the end of the day. We often do projects that are time and materials, which is where people are paying us on an hourly basis. We work with clients that have us on retainer agreements where they're paying a set amount to keep a team for a certain period of time. And we'll do fixed-based, project-based work that's really tied to particular outcomes. But in terms of like our services, the different services that we provide across strategy, design, and development, they are different sells, different needs, different outcomes, usually different stakeholder groups entirely. And it ends up being very different if, you know, let's say, for example, one client is just looking for a UX design project. They're likely going to be looking at different things than somebody who's purely looking for development expertise or purely looking for Drupal expertise. I'd say really our sweet spot tends to be where somebody is looking for more of a holistic product across all of the services that we offer.
From some of my previous jobs, I've had the opportunity to see some sales staff's work. I've never been in one of them, but I know that what you three must do is just sit around behind a phone and make cold calls all day long, right?
Smoke cigars.
Yeah.
And we have a bell. We ring a bell.
Coffee is for closers, right?
Yeah. You know it, buddy. No, I mean, I think that we made an intentional decision early on with our sales to not have it tied to commissions, or, you know, not do commission-based sales. And that was very much coming out of some of the experience that I had had at another agency that was commission-based, where it felt like the sales team took on every project that was available because they were trying to sort of maximize their own income, which is certainly logical for them. But a lot of those projects would end up then getting dumped on an unsuspecting team. They weren't always a good fit. They weren't always good stakeholders. So we spent a lot of time, you know, qualifying leads and then, you know, having a consultative process before we would ever make a sale. And yeah, our income is not necessarily tied to commissions, or it's not tied to commissions, and it's hopefully reliable as long as we're doing our jobs.
Yeah. So what were you calling that, depth charging?
Oh, depth charge sales. Yeah, like the sales guys are sitting in a boat above the water, you know, drinking Bud Light, and and then, you know, every so often they take a bomb and drop it in the water, and it explodes down where the team is. And it causes, you know, havoc for the team and all kinds of disasters, but their boat only gets rocked a little bit. And that was kind of what I had seen in some past agencies, where not necessarily that I worked, I don't want to name any names, but definitely something that we saw in the industry a lot when you had commission-based sales.
Why did you single out Bud Light in that metaphor there?
That's what sales guys
try. Oh, okay, gotcha.
We need to look svelte. We have to watch our girlish figures.
So how does...
And saleswomen.
Of course. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I've seen Helen with many, many Bud Lights.
You got that right.
So how does, as opposed to depth charging, how does Lullabot handle that? Do you bring in developers to help out with, to make sure things are doable?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like the people that are going to actually be doing the work on a particular client opportunity need to be involved in the sales process. I feel like as my job is really the initial like lining up of the opportunity and kind of feeling it out to see if it could potentially be a good fit. But very early on in the process, we try to, you know, connect a developer or an architect or someone on the team with technical knowledge with, you know, potential new clients, so that they can determine, is this project realistic? You know, can we come up with an estimate that fits within their budget and their project parameters? So we definitely like to include the team, you know, beyond just the sales team in the sales process.
Cart before the horse a little bit, though. Where do these clients come from in the first place? Like, how do we get in touch with people who are interested in buying Lullabot's service?
We're very fortunate. So our approach to marketing, almost unintentionally, was to just start talking about and writing about Drupal. And it came from a place of passion, but it ended up kind of positioning us as experts within that space at a kind of an opportune time, you know, circa 2007, 2008, 2009. And as that sort of name and brand got traction, we started getting a lot of inquiries. You know, often a CTO or director of technology has chosen Drupal, or their organization has chosen Drupal. And so they look at a select group of agencies who are well known for that and kind of will send inquiries. So we get a lot of inbound sales inquiries from the content marketing that our team continues to do really well, like what you guys are doing right now and the articles that people write for lullabot.com. We don't do as much of the outbound sales work of, like you were alluding to, the extreme example would be cold calling, and we definitely do that. But I mean, we definitely don't do that. And what I mean to say is, no, we don't do that. But yeah, it's, you know, it's somewhat feast or famine when you depend on inbound marketing, and that can be a little bit stressful at times. But we like to believe that if we keep writing and thinking and you know, putting our thoughts out into the world, it's going to come back to us in the form of work eventually. And so far that has happened.
Yeah, it's attracting like for like. It's, you know, we're also, I'd say a big portion of our work actually comes from repeat referral business, clients that have worked with us before. You know, people that have been a part of a project, know the Lullabots, have gone on to a different company and are, you know, maybe in a different role where they have a bit more authority, or, you know, just know us. And, you know, because we try to be just genuine people who get to know and work with our clients, we tend to have a lot of long-term, long-lasting relationships. It's really nice. We're very, very fortunate in that regard.
Someone once told me that was weird at a digital agency to have customers keep coming back for more.
Yeah, there was, I remember we used to say that the fact that we had done the Grammys so many years in a row, the Grammys website was kind of anomalous. And I think that's because there's a phenomenon out there where, like, people hate their salespeople and people hate their agency after working with them for a while because of, you know, any number of different reasons. The whole vendor client dynamic is sort of fraught with peril in a lot of ways. But yeah, I don't know. I guess that is anomalous. But we tend to, you know, want to keep working with clients that we like. And, you know, we've been very, very blessed and lucky that clients that like us want to keep working with us.
So how do we qualify clients?
So when that email comes in, what's the next move?
I think we use a basic framework that we call NATM, which stands for need, authority, time, and money. And those are kind of the first few things that we really look at when a potential, you know, new project comes in. You know, what's the need that they're looking to fill? Do we have the right expertise in-house to do this? Is it something that we want to do? You know, who are the stakeholders involved? You know, what's the budget and the timeline? And do we have resources to like fulfill the obligations of whatever timeline they have in mind? So that's just kind of the first step. And then beyond that, we have to, you know, really dig into it further. And that's when kind of we'll do more of the sales engineering process, which is where, you know, we'll bring in people like you guys, Matt and Mike, and figure out, like, is this actually, you know, doable? Can we come up with an estimate that fits within, you know, their guidelines and that sort of thing? So, yeah.
What type of projects do we turn down? And why would we turn down a project?
Usually it's... I don't like the notion of like turning down a project, because it makes it sound like, oh, you know, you have to be worthy to work with
us. We don't work like that. We don't do work like that.
Yeah. Oh, we're not. No, we have to turn down this project. I mean, the reality of it is it's more about when somebody inquires of us, or we end up in a qualification process, it's more about finding out if, you know, we're the right fit for each other. And, you know, is the project even viable? Are we the right solution for it? And, you know, that genuinely comes from a place of, we want to try to help potential clients and people that have been referred our way to find whatever the best solution is, whether or not it's us. And, you know, the instances where we quote unquote turn down a project, usually those are because we've ferreted out some reason that jeopardizes the chance of success on the project. And in those circumstances, it's more about, hey, you know, because we've found out now that we're not the right fit and, you know, we can't do it on your timeline or we can't do it with your budget or what have you, what can we do? What is the right fit? Can we, you know, point you in a different direction or make an introduction to another agency or, you know, maybe even give you some advice on that might be helpful? I don't know. But generally, it's we tend not to be sitting there saying, "We do not accept your project."
You haven't actually said that like that?
I definitely think there's projects that we have rejected on moral grounds, too. You know, being approached by, I don't want to go there, but yeah.
It's
yeah,
a bear trap delicate. You've walked into.
Let's just say that we like to keep it PG. At Lullabot for the most part. And we also want to feel good about the work that we do. And so So we're careful about.
I wasn't going to say it, but I caught it.
Mike likes to tell me that when I do that. But.
We're talking with the Lullabot sales staff. We have Helen Porter, Brian Scowron, and Seth Brown around the table. We're missing one of you guys, right? Isn't there someone else on the sales team?
Yeah, we're missing Jesse Mathewson, who is our account coordinator. She couldn't join us here in Palm Springs this week because she was on parental leave having another baby. And so we're very, very excited for her, but we miss her. She actually is back at the office today, but she's working virtually like the Lullabots usually do. And what Jesse does is what? Is virtual a bad word?
Yeah. We're all looking at each other. Jeff Robbins would be rolling over.
Oh, right. Yeah, I'm sorry. Working distributedly. She's working distributedly this week. And what Jessie does is, as account coordinator, she often is the one who is responding directly to inquiries when they first come in. So she's doing a lot of that NATM qualification that Helen referred to. And once she does identify a valid opportunity, she's surfacing it up to different people, grabbing various Lullabots to get involved depending on the nature of the opportunity. Jesse's great, and if you ever do submit an inquiry for us, you may just get to talk to her.
So, Mike, these four folks are definitely not the salesy type of person like you think about a salesperson. They just aren't it.
Yeah, I'm honestly kind of disappointed.
I object. I was not a good athlete in school. I wasn't very smart. I tried to be a programmer, and I wasn't smart enough to be a programmer. And I ended up in sales, and I think that means I am well-suited to the task and salesy.
We'll figure out what makes Lullabot sales staff different coming up right after this.
Matt.
Hey. Human Resources Coordinator Esther Lee, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Matt?
Super. So, great. Esther, we're hiring.
Yes, we are hiring. We have an open position.
And that's not often that we end up hiring for developers. At least it hasn't been for a while, right?
No, yeah. We added a few back-end developers earlier this year. But besides that, it had been over a year since we hired at Lullabot.
And we're taking resumes now, right? What are we looking for?
Yes, we are. The position we have opened is for a front-end developer with React Redux experience. And you can find that on our jobs board by going to lullabot.com/jobs.
So if somebody said, you know, I've got lots of React Redux experience and they're listening to the Lullabot podcast and they're learning about our sales team today, that's what the podcast is about. Lullabot's not your average company, is it?
No, and that is a worthy topic, sales.
Yeah.
Lullabot is not your typical company because I can vouch for that today as I'm working from home with my 4-year-old as my coworker.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, it is. She is very used to phone calls. And as soon as she saw me pick up my headset to hop on this phone call, she walked away rolling her eyes. She knows what's up.
So if somebody were to apply, what's something that they should know before they apply?
Yeah, well, on the job posting, we have listed a ton of qualifications that we are looking for. Don't let that be daunting. However, we're just specific about what this particular position needs. And then you can also look at the posting and see what you'll get out of, you know, applying if you got the position, our benefits and our perks. You can learn about our core values. The salary range is listed on there. And basically, all of the information is there. One thing I would mention, though, is that, and this is written all over our website, but we're really slow at hiring. You know, we really like to take our time and give every applicant the thorough review that we think they deserve. However, if at any point you feel like, where am I at in the process, please reach out to me. Send me an email at hr@lullabot.com and I can let you know exactly where we're at in that, because we do not want you to feel like we forgot about you.
What if somebody says, you know, I don't have a whole lot of React Redux experience, but I think Lullabot is the place for me.
You know what? That's okay. Even if you weren't perfect for this particular position, I always will make a profile for applicants like that on our applicant tracking system. And that way you're on file with us. If we have another position open up in the future, I like to think that we are really good at going back through our file of applicants and pulling out the ones that we think might fit and reaching out to them. It is not uncommon for me to reach out to people who might have applied over a year or two ago and just say, hey, how's it going? We have this position we think you might be good for. Would you check it out and see, you know, if you'd want to apply, depending on where you're at with your job right now. So even if this isn't the position for you, I would urge you to reach out. You could even apply for it, answer the questions that we usually ask, and then at least you'll be on file for the future.
So Esther, you and I are talking today, the day that the podcast is coming out. How long are we going to be taking applications for this?
Thank you for asking. This has actually already been up for 30 days, and we're only going to leave it up for about 2 more weeks. Okay. So if you are thinking about applying, I would urge you to do it sooner rather than later, because who knows when another position will open.
Thanks, Esther.
It's my pleasure. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Welcome back. We're at the 2017 Lullabot Retreat in beautiful Palm Springs, California, where the weather is a sunny, I don't know, 70 degrees-ish Fahrenheit, and there's a pool, and it's pretty awesome.
With blow-up animals.
Yeah, there are blow-up animals.
Mostly what we do is we jump off the side of the pool onto the blow-up animals, and then we have races, and somebody tries to knock other people off the blow-up animals.
Sounds like a really serious work environment.
Okay. That's really not what we do. No, we take about a week each year for a team retreat. And as a distributed company, it's kind of our chance to do a lot of sort of business that I think would normally happen maybe more organically, perhaps at a co-located company. But we have a lot of conversations about our future, about our vision, about different areas of the company and how they're performing. And so we spend some time. This year we mixed it up a little bit and tried to do a bunch of exercises around financial literacy and the books and kind of how Lullabot operates at that level, and that was fun. We do birds of a feather sessions where that's more of a sort of bottom-up exercise where everyone participates, and we cover topics ranging from you know, how working from home works for our kids and, you know, parenting tips for that, to, you know, hardcore technical, you know, how decoupled architectures should work with React and Redux or something like that. So those things can run the gamut. They can be technical or non-technical, but they give us a chance to kind of talk face-to-face and do a lot of sort of face-to-face things that we don't get to do the rest of the year. But the biggest thing in my mind that makes the retreat important is that as the year progresses at a distributed company, I think you start to feel a sense of disconnection to a degree. You can start to feel isolated. You can start to feel alone. You can lose touch or track of your peers. You can kind of lose your momentum in your work and kind of, you know, sort of forget that there's this thriving ecosystem of really smart other people you work with who are all doing awesome things. And I think getting together kind of refills that part of us that, you know, really needs to have human beings, other human beings around us that are doing the same work and inspired by the same things and are super smart. And that's the real purpose of the retreat.
Very eloquent.
Try again. Go.
That's very eloquent, Seth.
Well, thank you, sir.
So sales is all serious, right? There's never any funny stories or anything funny that happens, correct?
Never.
Sometimes I wish it was funnier, actually, Mike.
Do you have any?
Like your life?
Yeah. My life is just bundles of joy. Do you have any good stories you can share?
Yeah, sure. We've had some. We've had some interesting moments in sales. The first thing that leaps to mind would be one time I was working, actually along with Brian, we were kind of working with a major news media organization on a project that they wanted to do with us, and everything about it was batshit crazy. Can I say that on the air?
Yes, the FCC doesn't monitor us. We're okay still. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
So anyway, we realized that we weren't going to be able for the budget and the timeline and everything that they were looking for fulfill on the project. It was a really, you know, exciting brand. We really wanted to work with them and had numerous conversations and even a visit to New York. And so we were kind of bummed that we were going to have to tell this VP of technology that it just wasn't going to go work out. And the closer that I got to that call, the more nervous I became. And so I decided, like, there's got to be something to give me perspective. And so I settled on that scene in Dangerous Liaisons where Michelle Pfeiffer and John Malkovich have been having this affair, and she's deeply in love with him. And he, even though he won't admit it to himself, is also in love with her. But it all started on a dare, and part of, you know, John Malkovich's bet is that he's got to now break up with her. And so he does this speech where he goes in and she's sort of basically dying in front of him. And he keeps saying, it's beyond my control. It's beyond my control.
It's beyond my control.
It's beyond my control.
It's beyond my control.
So I practiced that as my way to break up with this particular stakeholder. And I went through and truthfully, I just said, you know, hey, I don't think this is going to work. We can't work with this timeline. Here's what we think about that's wrong with the process. You know, here's where we think, you know, the technologies that you're trying to work with aren't going to work, et cetera. And he was quiet, and there was this long, awkward silence. And, you know, I thought that his lawyer was about to get on the phone and tell me, like, what was going to happen to Lullabot. But instead, he just said, thank you. Can you tell that to my boss? And so he set up another call for us and with a much larger group of stakeholders, actually. And we kind of told it like we saw it, and they ended up agreeing. And instead of, you know, jumping into this huge contract, this huge fixed bid arrangement that they wanted, we were able to sell them on a research and discovery phase that would allow us to start without as much risk to us and, you know, without as much risk to them. And that had been something they were that he had told me was not going to be possible before. But once we had this conversation, we kind of had that breakthrough. So sometimes good things happen.
That's pretty good.
So it seems like treating clients like they're people is something that
I wouldn't go that far, man.
Well, I know, but it sounds strange, like when you put it that way. But having good relationships,
being human, being authentic, you know, I think genuinely caring about what we do, also, and sort of the types of projects that our clients do, you know, we get interested, we get curious, you know, we start hearing about, you know, what a certain brand in media is trying to do. And we have all this experience and all these ideas that we've got from past projects, and, you know, we want to work with them. And so I think they like being listened to, we like helping, even if we don't end up doing the work. They're usually great conversations. So
I hear, we're trying to figure out what kind of project we're going to do. A company would put out, you know, a call to arms for all of the prospective businesses.
Yeah, you're talking about RFPs?
RFP, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
RFPs, the bane of every salesperson's existence. I'm joking.
No, you're not.
We don't do that many RFPs, but we do get involved in them from time to time, and we certainly evaluate RFPs that come our way.
A request for proposal, right? RFP.
Yeah, a request for proposal.
Brian has three great questions that he always asks on every RFP.
Right. Yeah. And those questions are, how many other vendors have gotten this RFP?
Sure. You kind of want to know.
Yep.
You want to know the running what you're up against.
Are my odds like even halfway decent to even get this business?
37 different agencies have this paper exactly. In front of them. Yeah.
Okay. So that's question number one. Question number two is a current vendor under consideration for this RFP? Because a lot of times, particularly with nonprofit and higher ed, organizations, they have mandates to do RFPs, even when they know which company they want to work with. And so sometimes that helps kind of, protect against that. And the last one, which is actually, I think, the best question for any RFP is, why did you send us this RFP? because most of the time, I shouldn't say most of the time, a lot of the time, people can't answer that question, which means really they didn't do much research on you as a company, which means they really probably aren't considering you as a company, and they're probably not going to work with you.
Yeah, it's kind of like a poker game. There's that old saying that if you don't know who the mark is, you're the mark, and that totally holds with RFPs. Funny story with RFPs, one of my favorite moments was when I think it was a higher ed company, sent out their RFP without using the BCC line to like every company in the Drupal sphere, basically, so we could see like all of our colleagues' email addresses right there. And,
So Brian's first question was already answered. Who all got this? Yeah.
And that actually, I mean, that happens, and it's really funny because on competitive bids like that, on RFPs, a lot of it is finding out which one of your Drupal friends you're competing against, because that happens all the time. And especially some of these RFPs do what we like to call Thunderdome calls, which is where they say, rather than talk to each individual vendor and have a bunch of phone calls, we'll just get them all together on a giant conference line and give them some time to ask questions.
And of course, we recognize each other's voices.
Yeah, we're like, oh, there's that person. Okay, I know who I'm competing against.
It's a small world.
Yeah, it's a small world. But one of the funny ones, one of the ones I remember was, I think it was like a technology company, and you get on these Thunderdome calls, and you know it's going to be fun when you get on early, and you hear boop boop, boop boop, boop boop, boop boop, boop boop, boop boop, boop.
Yeah.
All the people joining, and then there's like an hour and a half of questions. It dies down, and one recognizable voice. There's a bunch of silence. The client says, "Does anybody have any more questions?" It's a moment of pause, and then somebody in the Drupal community, who we all know and love, just says, "Okay, nobody's gonna do it. All right, I'll ask the question. What's your budget?"
Which is probably a pretty important thing to know too, right?
Yeah, it is. But it's one of those where when you're in that type of scenario, you don't want to be the person to ask it. You want to kind of sit back and see if it just comes out naturally.
Yeah, RFPs are also how companies try to dodge that. Sometimes they throw that back at you and say, "Well, we just want to wait till all these RFPs come in, and we want this to be a competitive bid, and then we'll know what our budget should be." And unfortunately, it doesn't really work that way.
Sure, because you heard eight beeps, so there are eight other companies that are interested in this work, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is selling different technologies difficult? For example, like we're traditionally Drupal, but we're doing a lot of JavaScript now. How do we get JavaScript business? Do we do that in the same way that we get Drupal business? And what about everything else? You mentioned Samsung TVs, and I know we do some Swift development.
Sure. A lot of that has happened because Lullabots, who have been working with a particular client for a long time, are so good that the client trusts them so much. They're sort of like, "Hey, we're going to do this Roku app. You know JavaScript, right? Well, there's this scripting language that's a lot like JavaScript that Roku uses, and would you mind learning it so that we can have you on this Roku app project, because I trust you and I think you do great work." And so we've gotten into some things, Swift and Roku development, Samsung TV app development, through those types of, scenarios. With JavaScript, I feel like our team started writing a lot of articles about React and Redux, Angular, back a little while back. We've been more interested in React recently, but they got out there early on and they started doing their own pet projects and writing about them. And so we get discovered that way and often get inbound links that way. As far as from the sales perspective, you know, I think that's something that all three of us have to grapple with all the time, in that we're sort of like, you know, we're not a doctor, but we can play one on TV. You know, we're not programmers. We're not engineers. We know enough to be dangerous. We've been involved in a lot of conversations and retreats and onsites. And so we know the answers to some of the questions, and occasionally we'll take forays into sort of trying to talk about, you know, what technologies might be appropriate and why you would use one technology and not another, and what the upsides or downsides of a certain technological approach are. But if we feel out of our depth, I think all three of us are pretty comfortable saying, you know, I actually don't know the answer to that. Let me talk to my team and let's set up another call with them so I can introduce you to, you know, one of our engineers and we can get you a good answer to that question. But yeah, it does, you know, when you're selling a new technology, you're definitely out of your comfort zone. And I think you're quicker to pull that lever of like, okay, I know I'm totally bullshitting at this point. I better stop. Or hopefully you never start bullshitting in the first place.
Just
are honest about your limitations and you pull in the team to help.
Yeah, a good example of that. This is actually less of a new technology type of thing and more just sort of an adjacent sell, an adjacent service to what we do. I'm looking at, you have a sticker for our Accessibots on the table.
Yeah, the Accessibots. Only you can prevent inaccessible websites. That's really cute. What is it? Pink and orange and...
Yeah. Pinkish.
Yeah, pinkish.
I think your name is Rosie. It's a pink robot.
They've been handed out at some Drupal events before. And yeah, Mike is sitting here and, you know, going through a pile of them and folding them in half and ruining them all. But yeah, accessibility. Yeah, it's something a couple of our Lullabots are good at.
Right. And it's a different type of service than you know, I'd say our core business, but it's something that we offer. And so, you know, just like with JavaScript and different technologies, when we encounter situations where there's a particular need for something specialized like that, like accessibility, you know, we're very quick to pull in people who know way more than us on those topics. And, you know, those sales calls are generally, you know, us trying to get out of the way as much as possible and really put our people up to the forefront of the calls and the conversations.
I know that we have Chris and Helena and Danny all have some good accessibility knowledge, and we've what kind of engagement we've worked with them before, right? We've sold that to clients, and what kind of things do they do?
Yeah, so just in the last year, we've stepped up a little bit our accessibility offerings because those three folks that you named are so knowledgeable and passionate about it. And one of the things we did for a client was just an accessibility audit. They had a bunch of sites that they knew they wanted to make accessible, but they weren't quite sure how to do that, what they needed to do, what was in violation of accessibility and what wasn't. And so we audited the sites for them. And in addition to that, Helena actually went into their offices and gave their front-end developers a training in terms of like how to correct these accessibility issues. And we're hopeful that, you know, we'll continue to get more accessibility work.
Neat. So selling different types of offerings is different. So, you know, it's kind of a customized process, whether you're selling, you know, Drupal services or accessibility. I'm going to guess that also when we're talking to different types of clients, you might have to phrase the conversation or form the conversation a little differently.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking to a CTO, you know, they're trying to assess your company's technology chops, and they're going to be interested in different types of past experiences that you might have had, things that you can demonstrate, than if you're working with a chief marketing officer who's asking questions about your content strategy department or your creative services or websites that you've designed in the past. And so, you know, yes, you've got to sort of tailor. I like to think that we don't make pitches. I like to think we're not even selling people. We're just consulting with them about what Lullabots would like to do, what we're capable of doing, hopefully, and just being honest about our talents and our limitations. But yeah, it is different with different stakeholders. I mean, the other thing is different industries. You know, when you're working with higher education, there's often budget concerns that they may have that are very different, and we may tailor our approach to the types of budgets that they can muster. So it might be better for them to work with a consultant, on a part-time basis, who helps empower their team to build their own websites, because they probably can't afford Lullabot to come in and, you know, build the English department's website. So yeah, I think you try to talk about how we can best help the person that we're talking to, and that can be different with different people.
So you mentioned earlier that Lullabot is fully distributed. We have employees all across Europe, US, Canada. Does that make it difficult sometimes to sell our services?
Yeah, it comes up. It comes up pretty frequently. People have different levels of comfort with it. There are actually one of our largest clients who we've worked with for the past 4 years initially was very skeptical on our ability to be effective as a distributed company. Usually it's not a selling point, nor is it a huge problem. It's oftentimes just something we just need to talk through. Some people have fears that, you know, you're not going to be able to communicate as well. You're going to, like, I just need to have somebody sitting across the table with me. And the reality is, because we're always working in a distributed manner, we tend to communicate better than most people who are working in co-located offices. We have to be more intentional, more deliberate with our communication. And the truth is, there are legitimate times where it's important to be on site and be face to face, and we try to take as much advantage of on sites as we can within reason on a project. But you know, the truth of it is, at the end of the day, if somebody is really hung up on the distributed side of things and really has a lot of fear around that, and you know, thinks that it's not going to work out, we might not be the right fit. It's not something we're going to try to force down somebody's throat.
Do you wince or do you shy away? Are you nervous when somebody says, hey, where's the office?
No. It comes up all the time. It's usually one of the first questions people ask. They're, where are you located? And
we're on the internet.
We all have our autocomplete brain function when that question is asked, and we all sort of have our own answers to it.
So Seth, where's the office?
Actually, Matt, we don't have an office.
What?
We all work from home, and we hire the best people where they live.
Ooh, I like that. So you're able to actually start selling the talent right away. That's pretty good. Helen, where's the office?
You're making me feel slimy.
So Lullabot is actually a fully distributed company. We have folks located all over the U.S. and some even in Europe and Canada. But what that has allowed us to do is hire the most talented people, no matter where they are, regardless of location. And I think it makes for a really dynamic company. And the fact that we are distributed means that we have to hire people who are excellent communicators, because it's a huge part of being a distributed company. So I think that's definitely something that makes us unique.
So you mentioned client on-sites. Do we typically go on-site with clients? I've been on several. I know the answer to this. Mike, how long have you worked here? So tell us, we'll typically do like kickoffs, right?
Yeah, often it makes sense. I think that they're, you know, at the end of the day, we're primates, right? And there's something about being in the same room and shaking hands and sharing food and looking each other in the eyes. And, you know, there's a lot of signals that people give that are nonverbal cues. And sometimes you just don't get somebody until you've spent time with them face to face. So I think it is really important from that standpoint. I think also when you're in an intensive discovery phase and you're doing a lot of Q&A and you want the focused attention of your stakeholders, it's difficult to do on calls. It's really easy for people on calls to also be, you know, working on email or, you know, paying only half their attention to what's going on. And So I think there is something to be able to all getting in a room to kind of talk through what you're going to build and how you're going to build it. But those conversations usually last less than a week. And that's often enough, you know, for us to get started and get what we need and then be able to put processes in place to work remotely.
And usually we, whenever possible, we try to, from a sales perspective, have somebody who's kind of in an account management capacity tag along for these on-sites. It doesn't always work out that way because...
It's because we like tempura bacon, tempura fried bacon. We get to go to nice restaurants.
Yeah,
that's why I go.
That's okay. That's the real reason.
Okay.
No, but
actually, I'm a vegan.
Oh.
Just the tempura.
Unless the bacon's good, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but the real reason is, you know, when you have a relationship with a client, when you're working on a project like that, it's pretty important to, you know, have kind of a separate account management type of line of communication alongside the project team. That ends up being useful on both sides, client and us, in a lot of different ways. You know, it gives the client a back channel. It gives the ability to have sort of, you know, difficult conversations in a way that's not, you know, not really interrupting or you know, coloring the team in a negative way. And yeah, so we always try to foster those relationships on site too.
So I know that a lot of times there are some important sales trips throughout the year beyond just going to visit a client. Something like DrupalCon comes to mind. You know, a conference once a year where a lot of Drupal business is done. It's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal. It's our biggest tentpole event of the year. It's really the only, at the moment, it's the only major conference that we go to, and it's a busy week.
We've done a few others throughout the years, but DrupalCon is a recurring thing. Yeah.
Yeah. DrupalCon is one that we go to regularly. We have a party. We have a booth. A lot of our clients go there. Our team is there. The Drupal community is there. Usually topics that are pretty important to us are being discussed there. And it makes for one exhausting week.
Yeah, I have a really good story, and I've told you this before, Brian. I was at a DrupalCon several years ago, and we were at the Lullabot party. So Lullabot has a big shindig every DrupalCon that's pretty awesome. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm kind of surrounded by, you know, developers from my current project. And something I realized as I'm doing this is I'm kind of in the Brian mode at this point, you know. I'm sitting there, I'm paying attention to them, I'm laughing at their jokes and, you know, trying to hear them over the music going on.
Like basically just being a nice person.
Yeah.
It's hard to find.
It's very, very difficult. And I was realizing I was getting exhausted. You know, I think part of that was I was looking across the room and seeing, you know, Drupal friends who I haven't seen in a year. I ended up excusing myself and grabbing someone else just to kind of help out. And I thought to myself, I was like, wow, this is pretty difficult. And then later, you and I, Brian, were hanging out, and you got kind of cornered by a certain client that, you know, it made you stay up and hang out a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, which is...
Because Brian's a nice person.
Mike, you know who the most important person in the room is? The person in front of you. The person you're talking to.
That's true. You're not a nice person.
No. Yeah. You're making me second guess myself.
I thought Matt was joking when he was talking about somebody folding stickers in half and throwing them on the table until I looked over at Mike's area. That wasn't a joke, folks.
So Lullabot's a company now. What are we, 50-ish or so, right? So that's, what, 30, however many developers?
35.
35 developers. 50-ish people total in the company.
50-ish people.
Yeah,
ish.
In that neighborhood.
There's some ishness about these numbers.
I understand. Okay. But I'm just throwing it out there. So in the Drupal world, specifically, there are companies that are way bigger, right?
Yeah.
There are companies with lots more developers, bigger sales staff. Also, there are large agencies now that also do Drupal that are way bigger. How do we compete against that?
I mean, PHP has dominated the CMS market, and particularly WordPress and Drupal, more so WordPress, but but Drupal as well have you know taken over the CMS market. So yeah, the big agencies have obviously gotten into both of those things. And the answer is we can't always compete against those. Like we've recently, we lost a deal recently because we don't have 24/7 support. It's not part of our offering. And it was something that they wanted whatever vendor they were going to work with to be able to provide. So, you know, you lose sometimes, but I think we can also win deals because of some of the sort of things about Lullabot that are unique. Like we only book people for the most part on a single project. Certainly developers are only ever on one project fully dedicated. You know, you have somebody's full attention. We're set up for them to really kind of integrate and become part of your company. And I think if you're working with some large agency, you're not necessarily going to get that level of attention and commitment. I don't know. What else would you guys say are our competitive advantages against larger agencies?
I also think that because Lullabot is so intentional about growth and kind of, you know, keeping the team at a small level unless we find talent that's really amazing is one other way that sets us apart, because our team is just incredible, the expertise and know-how and like just great personalities that we have. You know, we don't really hire junior developers. So like any developer you get from Lullabot is going to be, you know, fairly senior and have a lot of big projects already under their belt. And I think that's pretty unique, you know, when compared against massive agencies.
Yeah. And another thing is that we don't always compete directly with these agencies. In fact, sometimes we work alongside them for the reason that Helen was alluding to. Sometimes our clients actually recognize, hey, you know what, we have different types of projects, some of which are very critical and high visibility and require really senior expertise. Maybe they're on very tight timelines or critical in some way. And some of the other kind of, you know, filler type of tedious work that a junior dev could do tends to be, you know, picked up by some of these other agencies. And it's actually like in several of our clients, we end up, you know, working together on different things within the same, you know, sort of organization.
So why do inevitably we're going to lose deals? What happens? Why do we lose deals short of not having a support department? How are we trying to improve, or are we?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we do lose deals occasionally, things that we're like actively pursuing. I think it can be, you know, any number of reasons. Sometimes it's, you know, budget, like that's the most simple reason. And you know, we are not a cheap agency, and we are also very honest about our estimation. Like when we propose something to a potential client, we don't like underbid or you know put forth an estimate that's not realistic. So you know sometimes we lose on.
Are there agencies that do that?
That shall not be named. Yeah, I think it happens. I mean, I think certain. Sometimes agencies will do it for a variety of different reasons. It's, I mean, it's a bummer, but you know, when you need work, sometimes you price more aggressively. It happens.
So, Mike, it's been a whole lot of fun this week getting together in person and kind of learning a little bit. I know Brian and Seth both gave presentations, kind of talking about, you know, what's been going on behind the scenes, and it's been good to get together and you know let folks in on the podcast know, you know, all about the Lullabot sales department.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun meeting our new folks too.
Yeah, yeah. Helen, do you have any final thoughts? Anything that sticks out to you? You know, being a Lullabot salesperson.
I like that we're not super salesy. I mean, that's what even first drew me to apply to work at Lullabot, because it said in the job description, like, not looking for a typical salesperson, and that's very true. Of the sales team here, it's, you know, we just want to find projects that are a good fit for what we do well and for our team, and that's the way we approach things, very honestly. So yeah, it's great to be part of this sort of sales team.
Brian?
Yeah, I kind of piggyback off that a little bit. Our one of our important core values as a company is be human, and if your company values are be human and you try to instill that across the company, it makes no sense that, or it makes sense that your sales processes should also try to be as human as possible. And so much of traditional sales is relatively inhuman. And I think as long as we're using that as our guiding star, generally good decisions get made.
Seth, do you have any final thoughts or any new reflections?
I like eggs.
Okay. It's been a long week, hasn't it?
It's been a long week. No, that was a quote from Billy Crystal. Anyway, comedy routine. Do I have any final thoughts, Matt? That's a good question. No.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Awkward.
That was a wrong answer.
Sad panda.